Thanks for joining us today on the Ideas Network. Larry Mueller here. Back with us today, Shirley Bauman, certified personal property appraiser. She owns Heirloom Appraisal Services. And we're going to be talking with her about how to know if the price you're paying is fair, how to decide if you have too much stuff, and as usual, of course, she'll answer your questions about antiques and collectibles. You can be part of our conversation. Just call us at 1-800-642-1234 or email us at ideas@wpr.org. And Shirley's got a new little deal going with some private classes. We'll talk about that a little later on. But Shirley, welcome back. Good to have you with us.
Thank you. It's great to be back.
So I have spent a lot of time in antique shops and stores and looking at things there, and I never know about the value of anything. I'll see something, I'd like to have that, it would be great. But then I look at the price and is that a fair price? How do you know if you're paying a fair price?
Well, it's hard for everybody to know that. Sometimes even the professionals have to stop and think and check things out. It's a hard topic. And, you know, right now in Wisconsin anyway, there's the start of lots of estate sales and garage sales, and you see things everywhere. Now, the number one question you hit on is, do I want it? Do I love it? Will it bring me joy? Will it be something that I will use and enjoy? Then you want to look, is it fair? You have to be paying attention to the market. And a lot of people don't realize that antiques and collectibles are a market. They go up and down, and what makes them go up and down varies a lot. Popularity, sometimes it's the TV shows or the magazines that start showing a particular product or an item, and everybody says, oh, that would look great in my house. And suddenly there's a lot of interest in that, so the prices go up. Or nobody wants fine china anymore from, you know, the 1900s. Why? I don't know. It doesn't go in the dishwasher or the microwave without being damaged. And maybe a lot of our millennials don't want to have a whole set for 12 people that might be used once a year at Christmas.
Yeah.
They move a lot. They don't have a lot of space. They might want have smaller places and just don't want to keep that around, because it's not particularly meaningful to them. What they want is something they can use today enjoy.
That makes sense to me. If you're looking at something and it's, let's say it's priced at $45, is it okay to say, hey, I'd give you $40 for that?
Sure, that's always okay. You know, in the estates, in the garage sale market, yes. Usually back when I did estate sales on the first day, I didn't negotiate at all. Because we're under contract to the family to do the best we can for them.
Sure.
So the first day I didn't negotiate, and the second day, and in my case, this is how I did it, I usually had things at 50% off. Now, if you loved it but thought maybe the price was a little steep, I often was able to let you leave an offer for it. And it had to be more than 60%, and I only did that on higher price things, over $100, because I couldn't take everybody's bid for, you know, $3 on a $5 item and call them back on that.
Yeah,
so
sure.
We did that on a higher priced items. And so if you were willing to go that route, then you might win a bid on it, or an offer, as we say. We weren't auctioning it, but an offer. And if you gave the highest offer that was reasonable, we'd call you back and say, yeah, we'll take that.
So what if I buy something that somebody tells me that this is an original whatever?
Mm-hmm.
And I get home and I say, I'll have somebody check this out. And it's not an original whatever.
You know, it depends on where you're buying from, Larry. If you're buying from an estate sale, usually it is no returns.
Yeah.
Now, if it's my estate sale, I won't tell you if it's an original something if it's not. I would have done that work to check it out. But if you're buying out of somebody's garage where, you know, mom passed and they had a few things, and that was one of them, that's a different story also. But when you have a 1 or 2 day sale, it's not usually a place where you can take something back. You're kind of on your own. But if you buy from an antique shop and that person there at the antique shop says that's what it is, you do have every right to try and hold them accountable for what they're saying because they're putting themselves out as professionals.
Yeah, that, and that makes sense as well. On the other side, a lot has been said, you know, about getting rid of clutter in our lives. I wonder how that pertains to collectors.
Well, you know, I have a different view of that than some of these people. Every life has to have some of the mundane. We just have things we use. I mean, your toothbrush doesn't want to make you do backflips or those kinds of things. But there's so much we can learn from people and about people. Like when I go into an estate, whether it's for appraisal or when I was liquidating estates, you would look around and you'd start to get to know people, the person that had passed. You know, there would be fine teacups in the china, in the kitchen cabinets to use instead of mugs. Now, why was that? Is it because she liked the idea of English tea? She just thought they were pretty? Or her arthritic hands couldn't handle a big, heavy mug full?
Yeah.
You know, you start to wonder about that. There was one estate I went into where there was maybe a 5 or 6 foot long closet rod full of the lady's plaid wool pleated skirts. 5 or 6 feet.
Oh, boy.
So, you know, this lady had a look.
Yeah.
And when she went out, that's how she wanted to look. And she had matching blazers, you know, in maybe 6 colors in there and could put her skirts with them. But that was her look. And it was a classic look, and that's what she wanted. So you get to know the woman was probably a little disciplined. She wanted to look nice. You know, there's another one that had hats. So many hats. And, you know, hats aren't all that popular for the older set right now. But when I saw some family pictures without her hat, I could see that her hair had thinned very much, and she was covering that up.
Yeah.
So.
Good stories behind all those.
You bet. So you get to know people by their mundane.
Shirley Bauman, our guest today, certified personal property appraiser. She owns Heirloom Appraisal Services. Give a call with your questions at 1-800-642-1234. Email us at ideas@wpr.org. We'll get to Jim in Cleveland in just a minute, but we had another caller who wondered about where to get ivory appraised. And I know there's some stories there about the ivory being illegal.
Yeah, there's a lot to learn about ivory. Right now, if I'm called in to appraise an estate for something for fair market value and they have no documentation on it, it's basically a zero value because you can't resell it. You need to have documentation, and I'm talking about documentation that the IRS, the government, would approve of as to the age of the item. And that's hard to come by. Some people do have those kinds of things, where they bought it, when they bought it. There are some people that just save all of those things. Again, like we were talking about, saving instead of throwing everything. And that, in that case, you could document and we could resell it. Now, I like to tell people to go to the website of the Antiques Roadshow because they have a nice article there about ivory and those laws and the resale.
Oh, okay. So that's a good place to go.
Good source.
Good source. All right. Well, now let's go to Jim in Cleveland. Jim, hello. Thanks for calling.
Thanks. I'm just curious about an item that I inherited from my grandparents. It's a large Stella music box with tin plates that you can place in, and the tin plates, when they go around, they pluck the sound boards. And the patent date on the Stella music box is 1892. I'm wondering what's the value of it and how do I preserve it and keep it and
Sure.
What size is the music box?
It's quite large. It sits on a table. It has.
Is it like the size of a bread box?
Oh, larger than that.
Okay. And the discs are probably 12 inches or more?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
And the case is wood, I assume?
I'm sorry?
Is the wooden case?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
Value of that can be quite substantial sometimes. Again, you've got to make sure of the working condition and the condition of the case, the finish, and that kind of thing. One of the music boxes that I see often is the Regina brand, which is probably the most well-known. And I think you're talking about something that's probably fairly similar to that. In the tabletop model, you could be talking $800 to $1,200 maybe, even, you know, mm-hmm. I can't tell you exactly here, but it is substantial. What I would suggest for it is to keep it in a place where the temperature doesn't fluctuate a lot and keep it out of direct sunlight.
Yeah.
So some place in the home where, you know, the temperature is fairly stable and not in sunlight. And then continue to use it now and again, something that sits, even us,
yeah.
that sits for a lot, you know, tightens up. So do use it now and again. You don't have to play it every day, but don't leave it sit for years without using it.
All right. There you go, Jim. Thank you so much for calling. Appreciate your call. Let's take a call from Beth in Duluth, Minnesota. Hi, Beth.
Hi. Good morning.
Good morning. What's on your mind?
Well, I just wanted to find out if there was any way I could find out about a set of 75 records that I'm not sure. I think they were my aunt's. And we're wondering if they're worth anything, if we could go and get them looked at somewhere around here.
You're in Duluth.
Who is the artist on it?
Oh, gosh. I can't get my hands on them right now to tell you exactly.
Okay.
Does that make a difference?
Yes, it would. If it's someone well-known and if it's a particularly popular set, it might make a difference. Or if it's rare, it's hard to say. Most of them, I would say, are not of significant value that I'm seeing because we see a lot of them. And they might be in like a cardboard folder with maybe six records in them or something of that sort. And we don't see it because a lot of people don't have the players. The record players that they can use those with. But in your area, I'm sure there's someone who can. If you've got a local antique shop, why don't you give them a call and ask if they know have someone that's a dealer there or who specializes in records and can give you an idea. And you can also go online and just to get an idea, search Google for that artist. In records, it does make a difference, too, as to the label, the record label, like RCA, Columbia, that kind of thing. There are lots more, but those come to mind, you know, who made the records and when. So
a little bit more research there.
Right. Plus, if they're not in good condition, then you probably don't have anything valuable.
Yeah. There you go. Thank you so much for calling. Shirley Bauman, our guest today. Certified personal property appraiser. She owns Heirloom Appraisal Services. Call in with your questions at 1-800-642-1234. And maybe you've got a photo of something you want her to take a look at. Maybe she can help out with that, too. You can, or an email question as well at ideas@wpr.org. I'm Larry Mueller, Tyler Ditter, our engineer today. Jill Nadeau, our producer. You are listening to the Ideas Network. Taking a look at collectibles and antiques today with our guest Shirley Bauman from Heirloom Appraisal Services. Great to have her back. Certainly, you can join in at 800-642-1234, email at ideas@wpr.org. Mrs. Z emailed in to say she has about 100 fiction hardcover books, mostly from the 40s to the 60s. She lives far from a city. What can she expect to get for them generally?
Well, books is a real specialized item. You want to look at your books to determine if they're first editions or not. And usually, in fiction anyway, if they're not famous authors, unless they're first editions, you can count on, you know, selling them for a couple of dollars or a dollar, two, three, five maybe. If they are someone special, if they're first edition, by special I mean well-known, first editions, which you can find inside the front cover, if it says, you know, publishing date and there's four dates behind it, that's not a first edition. The first edition will have one date.
One date.
And then you'll want to go to the internet. I think you can start there. ABE Books is a big site where you can put in your book title, name, the date it was published and such, and get an idea for what books are selling for. And then if you find a few in that grouping out of your 100 that might be worth it, then you might want to take it to an appraiser. And you can find those on the internet too. Go for Book Appraiser Wisconsin or Madison, Milwaukee, wherever you tend to go from Lamira for that.
But it's ABE?
ABE Books.
ABE Books.
Yes.
Yeah, well, that'd be a quick way to go on.
It's a good way to find out.
To get started. And, of course, if there's the author has signed it, he or she,
yes,
that could add to the value.
If it's a well-known person. You know, maybe if it's a football book and Bart Starr signed it, that'd be great. Or Harry Potter with J.K. Rowling's signature, that'd be great.
That'd even be greater.
Yeah, even be greater. But if it's, you know, John Smith from nowhere, who no one seems to remember, signed it, not so much.
Not so much. Well, let's take another call. Denise in Lamira, your turn. Hi, Denise.
Hello. I am wondering, how do I find an appraiser for jewelry that I can trust?
Yeah. Great question. I assume you're talking about fine jewelry.
Well, I'm not sure, to be honest.
Okay.
I inherited a lot of older, I don't know if it's antique or not, jewelry.
Mm-hmm.
So, and I'd like to get it appraised to see for selling and for keeping for insurance purposes.
Sure, sure. The reason I ask about fine jewelry, you know, I am an appraiser and I can do antique and vintage costume jewelry, but I'm not a gemologist. So if you have gemstones, I have a diamond tester and I can say, oh, this is testing for a diamond,
yeah,
but I don't know the quality of it. I don't know how to figure out the size, and it's not legal for me to do it because I'm not a gemologist. So you want to go to either a real reputable jeweler that you know of and ask people, get, you know, word of mouth, or, you know, look for jewelry appraisers through any of the major organizations, Appraisal Association of America, International Society of Appraisers, or AAA, American Appraisers Association. And pretty much those people in the organizations are going to be fair, and you can trust them.
They've got a code of ethics.
Right.
They've obviously passed
testing and
testing
class
and so forth.
Yes, and don't ever leave your jewelry with an appraiser, a jeweler or whatever. Make an appointment, take them, have them appraise them while you're there. Now, if there's tons and tons and tons of it, you might need to take it in batches for them. But I say don't leave it with them because, you know, how do you know that a stone hasn't been changed out?
Yeah.
But like I say, if you really find a reputable person through word of mouth and such, that's where I'd go.
Thanks, Denise. Good luck. Appreciate your call. Susan in Racine, your turn now. Thank you for calling.
Hi.
Hi, what can we do for you?
My question is regarding an old settee that I got from an estate sale that was from the home of one of the family members from the Barnum and Bailey Circus. And they, at the time when I bought it, they were under the impression that the settee was from the 1700s, and it is quite old. It's hand-carved. I did have a verbal appraisal from PBS, their antique appraisal fair, And I'm at a point now where I would like to get rid of it, but I don't quite know how to advertise it or where I could possibly take it.
Okay, well, you've brought up quite a few points. You mentioned the Ringling connection, and that's fine to say that, but if you don't have any documentation, you know, I could have a settee and say that. Mm-hmm. So you need some kind of provenance that really helps prove that in order for that to add value to the settee. Most of the people are not buying settees right now and that kind of thing. They want big old comfortable leather couches they can, you know, curl up in and watch a movie. So it's going to be a hard sell. You'll have to find the collector. If it really is from the 1700s, I would have that authenticated. Find someone who really knows furniture, is a furniture specialist from your area, and find that out. And then you can use that and date it. And, you know, just find somebody that really knows furniture. Because, for example, I'm working with an appraisal now that I'm updating. And the previous appraiser from the 1980s attributed something to Meissen porcelain, and it's definitely not Meissen. And so I have to disappoint these people.
Oh.
But I have the information to show them that that's not Meissen. But they've believed for all these years that's what they had and that's what it was valued as. So you want to get, and this was a generalist appraiser, so you want to get, this is just an example to say, you want to get a furniture specialist. And you can look online to find someone in your area from, again, the appraisal associations and really search for a furniture appraiser. And then to sell it. If it really is something from the 1700s and it's that special and you have documentation from the Ringlings, I would say go to a major auction house.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking.
And look for one in the area. I know Chicago, and I don't know where you're located, but Chicago, Duluth, the Twin Cities, whatever the
major. She's in Racine.
Racine, so Chicago wouldn't be that far. And look for something. I mean, there's a Sotheby's down there. Leslie Hindman is down there that I've sent things to, as well as Susannan's Auctions.
And you don't have to go down there with it and say, what do you think? You can send photos, can't
you? Send real good photos, and then they'll decide if it meets their criteria. Often they send someone up. To look at it before they get it into there. They don't want to get it into their place, have to store it and handle it and then send it back.
Yeah.
So it's easier a lot of times for them to just send up a person to help you with that after they see the photos.
So there you go, Susan. Thank you so much. Appreciate your call. Linda in Winona, your turn. Thank you for calling.
Okay, thank you. Mine is somewhat related to what you were talking about. I have a roll-top desk that I'm wanting to sell. It's a Northwestern Furniture that was made in Milwaukee. It's one of the ones that's about 4 feet tall and 6 feet long with the C roll-top, not the S, original hardware. What's the market for that? And when you said somebody who knows furniture, how do I go about that with a...
Okay. To go and find a furniture specialist, I would go on the internet, go to like one of the major appraisal organizations, the International Society of Appraisers, the Appraisers Association of America, Appraisers Society of America, and they have places where you can go that says find an appraiser, search for an appraiser. Go look for somebody and put in the criteria that you want, you know, Wisconsin, Milwaukee, whatever. And then they usually have a specialty that you can put in and put in furniture as the specialty that they have. And they can help you with that. Being made in Milwaukee and you living here, that might be a good place if you could sell it in the Milwaukee area, or at least advertise it in the Milwaukee area. If you find out that it really isn't anything particularly valuable and it's an antique that someone might collect, but it wouldn't go to, let's say, a specialty auction, then you might just put it in the classifieds, put it on Craigslist. You can put it on eBay and have local pickup only. Those are ways to do that.
All right. There you go. Thank you so much for that question. And Joyce and Nina, your turn. Hi, Joyce.
Hi. I have a question about an item my family has found in a curio that my mother inventoried pretty detailed, but not documentation, but she's got on there where she got the item, teacup. There's some copper leaf silver china, dated from 1888, 1880s. We're just wrapping it all up to store it. But my sister's just wondering, we didn't know who to call, and this just show came on the very next day after we were doing this. Where would we find out if this is any value? But they're not sets of these. They're not full sets. They're like two or three different type colors. But the four-leaf clover one is three salt dishes in a bigger dish. I assume through some kind of like radishes or something.
Yeah, you're kind of breaking up there, Joyce. And I'm not sure that. Surely you got all that, but...
Well, I don't have the details about it, but I can give you some information. What you want to do is look at the back of the china. Look at that maker's mark, and you'll probably find the name of it or maybe initials of the maker, and there are sites online that you can go to that show you those marks, and they will tell you that company used this mark between these dates. So if you have a mark that's, let's say it has, it's inside a circle and has a crown on top, and it might say they only used that from 1880 to 1900. So you can put then your china in that period just by looking at that mark and finding out that information. And then they might say after 1900 they dropped the crown, so off of their mark. Mm-hmm. And so then you can see it was post-1900. So that's a way to look at that. And then once you know that, you could look up the pattern as well. Replacements.com is one site. Now, they're very high for their prices, and that's because they're catering to someone that broke, you know, one of Mom's plates,
yeah.
And it was the family heirloom, and they want to replace it, and they'll pay almost anything. So that's not a price you can get as a private seller. But that will help you determine, it's one place to go that might help you determine what you have, the pattern. You can also, if you take proper photos of it, you can send them into that company to get help with identifying it.
That's a good advice.
And
there,
talked about wrapping it up. I just want to tell everyone, don't wrap porcelain, any ceramics in newsprint. That has been printed on. Ink rubs off on that, and you cannot get it off of porcelain, ceramics, pottery. Use plain paper, and if you then have the plain paper on it, even tissue paper, and then you use newsprint to pat it, do it that way, but don't put it right against the porcelain.
All right, there you go. Thank you very much for that call. Will emailed that he has an antique Mickey Mouse rocking horse and can't find the comparable sales. How do you price something without having something to compare it to?
That is the question that appraisers really struggle with all the time. And what we do then is we look at things as similar as possible. In that case, you want to look at any kind of Disney or character, especially the older, you know, depending on what vintage it is. Is it a 1930s Mickey Mouse? That's pretty valuable, the one with the pie eyes. Or is it from the 1990s? You want to look at that period, and then you want to look at as close of an item as you can. A rocking horse with any Mickey connection, or Minnie, or Donald Duck, or any of the others, if you can find that. If you can't, then you want to look at as close as you come. Then you want to look at other character rocking horses. It might not be a Disney one, but it might be some other character. And what are they going for? And then you kind of put all that together and make an educated, guess of extrapolating from all the things as similar. And you want to find things then that sold as close to the date today as possible. If something sold 30 years ago, doesn't at all mean that's what you're going to get right now. But I will tell you, Mickey continues to be popular, and you might have something that's really worth doing that kind of research.
I'm looking at my Mickey Mouse watch right now as we speak here.
There you go.
The air. I like Mickey Mouse.
Yeah.
Oh, boy. Pat in Ithaca, it's your turn. Hi, Pat.
Hi. I have some china that I inherited from my mother that's Noritake, and it was pre-occupation, but I have no idea how or where to get it appraised.
Okay, the question I always ask when somebody calls about I need china appraised or anything is, what's the purpose of your appraisal?
Insurance and or to sell it.
Okay, those are very different
numbers you're going to get.
Yeah, different appraisals. And you might say, why? Well, when we go to sell something, especially china, like we talked about before, not a lot of people are buying that anymore because they want things that can go in the dishwasher or the microwave. They want things that they don't want to store a big set of china that they have to be very careful with. So if you're going to sell it, you're probably going to have to get kind of a low price that compared to if you're insuring it. If you are insuring it, we go for replacement values. And just a little bit ago, I mentioned replacements.com. And that might be a place to help you look for replacement value for insurance. For example, if you break that gravy boat and you want to replace it, that's what you insure it for. So your insurance value on a set like that, looking at replacement values, that if you want to go to buy a replacement for, in a reasonable time frame, not waiting for a bargain at somebody's auction or estate sale, but, you want to replace it now, that's what you insure it for. The set might then insure for $4,000. But if you go to sell it and you can't find someone that really wants that, you might end up selling the whole set for $200. So it's a very different number. So that's how I have to answer that. And I'm sorry to give you that information, but I think that kind of explains the difference there. And again, you want to go and look at that mark and such to find out what time period or what pattern, and get all the information you can about that Noritake china. And you kind of have a date. You say it's pre-occupation, so that's pre-war and such. So that helps. But you can look on sites like eBay and look for their sold listings under the advanced search and see what they're going for. Now, the ones that go for more are somebody who sells them not as a set but pieced out. So if someone wants the covered vegetable dish because they have that set and they don't have a covered vegetable dish, then you can sell that for a little more. But for someone to buy the whole set to start over, not so much.
Mm-hmm.
So it's really quite a complicated sort of thing right now.
All right, there we go. Thank you so much for that question. Cal in Rhinelander, we're going to go to you next. Hi, Cal.
Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I have a unusual thing. I've got a Meet the Beatles album, and when I was very young, I sent over to Britain for $5 to get the Parlophone label Meet the Beatles album, and it was sent to me and it was broken in half. So I sent them a letter and asking them if they would replace it and if I had to send the broken one back. And I got a letter back from Brian Epstein with a new album saying I didn't have to send the broken one back. And I have all of it. Where do I go to get an idea of what it's worth?
That's pretty cool. So you still have the broken record, too.
I'm pretty sure I do, yeah.
Yeah.
But I have the letter. And in fact, the second album is still in its original packing sent over from Britain.
Yeah. Well, the interesting thing about Meet the Beatles is it was early, and they had two covers on that one. I believe that's the one. I might be mixing the first and the second one here. And the one cover that was showed them in bloody butcher's aprons was met with outrage, and they had to change that really quick. So if you have one of the old ones, it's worth more, a lot more. than just a standard Meet the Beatles with the pictures of, you know, four nice looking lads on it. The whole story is what's interesting. And, you know, Brian Epstein was their manager, and he's well known. His signature itself probably wouldn't be worth that much, maybe, I'm guessing, between $50, $75 for his. But if the letter has anything to do, and if it's really his signature is important rather than somebody signing for him, and that's hard to know. So you want to get a someone who is a specialist in manuscripts, papers, autographs, or popular culture. And those are what I would search for on the website of those appraisal associations I mentioned before. There's a lot of things from the Beatles that are out there because they were so beloved from their time that people who got things just kept them. So it's hard for me to say what the whole grouping could be worth, but it's that story of having the broken record, sending it back, being, you know, a young woman who just really wanted that Beatles album. So that is what's going to bring the value up on that. It's an interesting story. And, you know, I bet if you had gotten on the roadshow, even if it wasn't particularly valuable, they'd have put you on because the story's great.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, there you go. Thank you so much, Kel, for that story. I love that story. That's great. That must be kind of the fun part of one of the fun things about being an appraiser. You hear some wonderful stories.
It is. We hear some great stories, some fun stories, some funny and some heartbreaking ones.
Yeah.
As we go through things that happened and didn't happen and that they, you know, expected in their lives. But and that's why I say don't throw everything out, because it's those things with their stories that tell the history of what was going on in time. You know, by having that and putting that story together of the Beatles and the records, and that tells a future generation what was important at that time.
Yeah, so absolutely.
If a broken record doesn't give you joy, but it's got a good story, keep it.
Hang on to it. Oh, man. Shirley Bauman, our guest today as we talk collectibles and antiques. I'm Larry Mueller. You're listening to the Ideas Network. Taking a look at collectibles and antiques today with our guest, Shirley Bauman from Heirloom Appraisal Services. Wonderful to have her with us. Join in. Well, all our lines are filled. You can email us a photo or your questions at ideas@wpr.org. Love to hear from you. And we'll take Mike in Milwaukee next. Mike, thank you for calling.
Well, thank you very much. Enjoy your show.
Thank you.
I have a full set of Forstoria, 12 pieces of each, wine, goblet, water, and champagne, I believe.
Mm-hmm.
And it was my mom's. And she was it was a wedding gift. She was married in 1945. Now, I know crystal as well as china is not as collectible, but it is a family heirloom, so I'm not going to be selling it. But in case I have to, or for insurance purposes, I would like to know what it would be worth.
Okay, I would recommend an appraisal for insurance value. Find an appraiser, and that's something that we see a lot of. It's not you find a good general appraiser should be able to do that. You know the name. They had lots and lots of patterns, but they might be able to find the pattern. Sometimes we can't because there's just too many, and they named them something like A5. So we can't always find the pattern. But since you want to keep them as a family heirloom, I would insure them, which means we're going to look at replacement value. So if you have to purchase one and you're not going to wait forever to replace that goblet, this is the price that would be paid, and that's how they do it. Now, for an insurance appraisal, you know, talk to your insurance agent or professional and find out if they want a written appraisal. You know, I have similar crystal from my parents who were married in the 40s. There's a, you know, they're around. They're not that hard to find. But they're special to you because they were from your family. So that's what you want to look at. Find out if they need a written appraisal for insurance, or if you can get, you know, a knowledgeable person who's giving you a verbal appraisal, and you just tell them this is how much I want to appraise them for. Because it's not really extremely rare kind of thing, they might do that. But otherwise, you know, look for an appraiser and get that done, and you've do it for insurance. Because a resale value right now just isn't really
there isn't any.
Worth it.
Yeah. And we'll take another call from Darlene, this time in Viroqua. Hi, Darlene.
Yes, hi. My husband has a 4-ounce little bottle full of pearls that were gotten from the river bottom, Mississippi River bottom, near Fountain City, Wisconsin. And they were harvested, I guess you'd say, probably in the early 1900s. All different sizes. And is there any way to find out a value on those?
That, again, is something I'd look for a jewelry appraiser, not just like an antiques and art appraiser, because I could look at them and certainly tell if they're genuine or not, but I couldn't value them. So you want somebody who has the knowledge of valuing that kind of thing specifically, whether it's a local jeweler that you can talk to who would be knowledgeable. And, again, look for somebody who knows the antique value as well as just the intrinsic value that they're pearls. And, again, Mississippi pearls might be different than those that someone brought from Japan when they were in the war. So you do need to, if you call for an appraisal, ask those questions if that's something that they can are knowledgeable about.
There was quite, if my memory serves, there was quite a little industry around Mississippi pearls at one time.
Yes, there was. And I don't know all the specific history there, but it was something that was, like you say, quite a little industry and popular. So, you know, you want to get somebody from kind of the local area.
Yeah, well, I think.
That knows that history and story. And maybe it's someone in Wisconsin or maybe someone on Iowa across the river.
Or in Minnesota.
Minnesota, yeah.
Yeah. Yep, for sure. So there you go, Darlene. Thank you so much. And on to Joan in Madison. Hi, Joan.
Yeah, I understand that collectibles and antiques are on a downturn right now, but can you name anything that's really hot in the market in this category?
Well, one of the things that I think is hot right now, continues to be, has been for a while, is advertising signs. If you go and look at the porcelain signs that are from advertising, either interesting products that we still know, maybe the has the Pegasus horse from Mobil Oil on. That's very popular. Or a brand of something. There was one on the Antiques Roadshow I saw last night that was interesting. It was advertising axle grease, and it was from a time when the wagon wheel came off. And, oh, I should have had such and such of axle grease. I wouldn't be in this fix. So, you know, that's one of the really hot things. In some cases, really interesting vintage jewelry is still hot. Even costume jewelry from designers. People are still after that. So those are a couple of things that
hot right now.
Yeah.
All right. There you go, Joan. Thank you. Bob in Franklin, your turn. Hi, Bob.
Hi. We inherited some Chinese items. Some of them are very unusual. We have a wood case with looks like a block of wood that has been carved, solid block of wood, carved into a whole intricate group of military figures, horses and buildings and men with swords, but it's all one piece, and it's about 2 feet by 15 inches in a glass case. It looks like it's been painted gold. Do you have any idea what that is?
Actually, I'm sorry to say that I don't. Asian arts is not my specialty. But when I do get something like this, I do consult with, that comes along in my appraisal practice, I consult with appraisers that do have that as their specialty. So again, you could go to the Appraisal Association website and look for someone with that and, you know, see if one of those who has Asian arts as their specialty could help you out. Another thing that I haven't mentioned that's interesting and simple to do is if you find a Facebook group about Chinese arts, Chinese decorative arts, you could post good pictures on there and you'll get opinions, and sometimes you'll get varying opinions. But at least that'll give you a place to start. And someone or everyone might say, oh, that's really nothing special. They were a dime a dozen and there are so many. Or they might say that's from a very special kind of thing. Then you get an idea if you should continue to look or not. Don't take it as the gospel truth because anybody can respond to you. But if you're, you know, getting a lot of responses of people telling you a similar thing or, you know, corroborating someone's opinion, that'll help you. And it gives you a place to start.
Yeah, that's a great idea. Some good photos of that. Mm-hmm. Go to a Facebook group.
Yeah, you can find a Facebook group for almost anything.
Yeah, these days for sure. There you go, Bob. Thank you so much. Rick in Burnhamwood, your turn. Hi, Rick.
Yeah, I had found a stamp collection book back when I was 10 years old. Well, that would be 44 years ago. In the back of one of my parents, they used to buy and sell cars, and it was in a back end where in the trunk where the tire would be, and then there'd be a carpet over it, but there wasn't a tire down there. We had this book in it. It's dated in the early 50s, and it says New World Stamp Collection out of New York. But there's stamps in there from all the way from the late 1800s from almost every country. I was just wondering where I could find out how much that would be worth.
Well, unfortunately, stamps in general aren't that valuable anymore. It's just not a hobby that people are into these days like they were at one time. I guess there's so many more things to collect that they kind of left that behind. In some circles, though, it is becoming a little bit more interesting, though. You want to find someone who specializes in stamps, whether that's often something that someone in coins and stamps often go together. Yeah. If there's a shop somewhere in your area, I know in Madison there's one in the lower level of Hilldale that I have worked with them, and they're very knowledgeable about stamps and coins. But there's lots of them, and that's what you have to do. There's, like I say, there's few of them that have a large dollar value anymore.
Yeah, there you go. Thanks so much for that question. And Victoria in Little Salamigo, your turn. Hi.
Hello. So I am calling. I have a 1962 Barbie and Midge little briefcase, like a wardrobe.
Yep.
And I also have 14 little booklets, like catalogs, where you can actually purchase the outfits for the Barbies. I was wondering how much that would be around.
Well, you do have something that collectors are after right now. What I would recommend to you, because I can't see, you know, they came in different colors and sizes and with little different pictures on. So that's important. What I would do to find out is to go on eBay and look at, again, their completed sales under the advanced search and look for ones just like yours. Those little booklets also bring money. They do add value, and they do have value to collectors. There are some people that are just, you know, vintage Barbie, everything. But since there's so many different, I can't say what outfit was on there. Interestingly enough, some Barbie doll outfits bring lots of money and some bring little. So it changes, and it's based on who's collecting what at the time. So go and look on eBay completed sales, compare it to what you have, and you'll get a good idea. But don't look at just one sale. Look at, you know, a number of them so you can kind of get an average. Because if it's just one, that might be the one thing somebody bought and overpaid for because it was the only thing missing from their collection, or they always wanted it. So make sure you look at more than one completed sale.
There you go, Victoria. Thank you very much. And Jerry in Appleton, hi.
Hi. Hey, you were talking about them advertising signs and stuff like that.
Yeah.
How about, like the you said something about the grease. How about the cans and stuff that old grease used to come in? I'm talking old, like back from the 40s and stuff like that.
Sure. A good place to watch and find out about those cans is the American Pickers TV show. And they have a good website, too. One of the pickers, Frank is his name, just loves those cans, and he buys them up wherever he sees them. And that's his one of his collections. And you get an idea of what he pays for them. I think he's paying more than you could ever sell them for here because they're making a good dramatic, you know, moment on a TV show. But they are collectible. And again, that eBay.
And maybe
place.
Frank could buy it from you.
Right. Maybe he would.
Send him an email with some photos.
Yeah.
Well, I'll tell you what, Shirley Bauman, our guest today from Heirloom Appraisal Services, she'll be with us till 12:30. We'll take a look at the news and then we'll be back. Stay with us. Great to have you along today on the Ideas Network. Larry Mueller here taking a look at collectibles and antiques with our guest, Shirley Bauman. Shirley is a certified personal property appraiser. She owns Heirloom Appraisal Services. Always great to have her come by. And Shirley, you're starting a new,
business? Service.
Service, yes, because more classes and so forth?
Yes. What I will do is come into your home, whoever have me over, and we'll have a class in your home for you and your friends and relatives, however you want. Or we can do a private appraisal fair in your home where you and your friends can bring something in and we'll talk about those things, tell you what you have, and maybe give you an idea of value. And we can cater it to your needs. If you want something to go on for Saturday afternoon for 2-3 hours, or if you want a class, maybe you want 2 hours every week for 3 weeks because you want to learn a little bit more about antiques and it's something you want to do. You can give me a call and we can tailor something to your needs. And, of course, there's going to be a minimum fee for that. I will not be selling products. It's not like
sure.
a Tupperware party. But you can have me come into your location and we'll do that event for you.
That sounds like a lot of fun. So people can go to your website.
Yes. And all the contact information will be there. I don't have a lot of information about these classes because it's brand new. But you can look at kind of special events, and that gives you a little bit of an idea. But there'll be contact information. You can either send me an email or give me a call, and we'll set up something for you. My Facebook page, Heirloom Appraisal, you can also send me a message through that.
All right. So there you go. So and the website is heirloomappraisal.com. Okay. There we go. Beth sent a photo that hung over her parents' bed since the 40s. And it's quite a lovely woman in a, what you might say, almost medieval type dress. And she's holding a equally good-looking little baby boy. Mm-hmm. And they wondered if there's any information on this.
Well, that's very interesting. When we looked at that photo that she posted on Facebook of her photo, we said, oh, I don't know if that's a photo. Are you sure that's not some piece of artwork, a painting or lithograph or something? No, she says it's a photo. So then we have to look at clues. Like Larry said, the dress is from a period when they didn't have photographs. So this one's staged in a costume. And look at the background. If it was just a snapshot, it would have a different background. So this was done in a studio to have a backdrop like that. And then you know, what was the purpose of this? Is this a representation of just a mother and child or Madonna and child? You want to look at that. But the most important thing to looking at value, really, because we're looking at something that was staged and it was probably done as a commercial venture, I would take that out of the frame and see if you can find any information on there, maybe in the margin or on the back, as to who the photographer was, since it's a commercial venture. And that is where the value would be, when you found out who did that and what the situation was that they set this up for.
And because it hung over the parents' bed for 40 years, I'm leaning a little toward Madonna.
Yeah, yeah, that seems like what I would say, too. So,
especially if it doesn't look like any of the relatives.
Right, right. If that isn't Aunt Gertrude, think about that. But again, I assume it's kind of a family heirloom for being in one place at one time. And there is some interest in religious items, but not maybe not as much as some other topics. But it's who the photographer was and when.
Yeah. So, Beth, you're going to have to take that photo out of its frame and take a look at the back, and or maybe on the margin in the front.
Mm-hmm. That's
Could
right.
be in the margin in the front, too. Well, Myrtle in Madison has something for us. Hi, Myrtle.
Hello.
Hi. What can we do for you?
I have a Fisher Space Pen double desk set, and it's from way back from Nixon era. And the little plaque on it states that here men from planet Earth first set foot upon the moon July 1969 A.D., and Collins, Armstrong, Aldrin, and President Nixon are engraved on it.
That's a nice commemoration of the period in time where we were kind of in a space race. I don't know what to say about value. That's probably something that, you know, was commercially put together, and I would think, since it's not, centuries old, it's something that an internet search would turn up. Those things are probably not extremely valuable. My guess, just off the top, would be that it would be somewhere maybe between the $40, $60 range in that respect. But, don't hold me to that. I'm just talking off the top of my head.
It's kind of interesting because that's 50 years ago, and there's some books out this year on the history of the space race, and I've interviewed an author not too long ago about it. So, it's possible that some of that could
It is, and, if this were something you were wanting to sell, this might be a good time, that there's lots of interest in there now because of the 50th anniversary, and we're seeing a lot of media talking about it. So that's another thing, as people talk about, when should I sell things? Well, when there's a lot of hype about the subject, and that's something you have, that's the time.
Yeah, there we go. On to Kathy in Richland County. Hello, Kathy.
Hi, Larry and Shirley. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
Listen, this is what I have, and I'm just looking for the best estimated value of this. We brought back a tobacco basket from Kentucky several years ago. It is about a little over 4 by 4 feet square. It is slatted oak, and the slats are about 2 inches wide, and then, of course, it's wrapped all the way around in a slatted oak piece also. So it's woven, and it has a little bit of concave or convex to it, depending on which way you turn it, of course. It is in pretty good shape. It's held together also by a few nails I see in here, rusty old nails. One slat is cracked, and it's a little beat up here and there on one of the slatted edges. But overall, I think it's in pretty fabulous shape. I'm also wondering from what decade it might be from. I'm thinking 30s and 40s, because it's like a pre-palette, what do you think?
Well, it sounds like you have something very interesting. And, you know, I don't have a problem with some of the condition issues you told me, because I think that that's kind of, you know, wear.
Yeah.
And that makes it, tells us that it was probably really used in the tobacco field. And I love that, something that has honest wear on it. Boy, a value is hard. You know, I assume there's not any kind of a signature on the bottom or anywhere.
No, I don't even think there's a manufacturer stamp. In fact, I think these were handmade.
Yeah, actually. sometimes they were handmade, you know, if you go to like the Nantucket baskets, a lot of times on the wood piece on the bottom, they carve in their name. And so those baskets, those old, old Nantucket baskets that were signed can go for, you know, $2,000. But that's because of where they were made and who made them. And those basket makers that signed them became well known. Yours was a piece of an industry that was used for a purpose. I can't tell you without seeing it when it was made. But if you're thinking maybe in the 30s, 40s, and that large, and I think it's probably a kind of a statement piece if you're using it for decorating in your home, that, you know, it could bring, again, I don't know how much the damage affects it because I don't know what it is, but it could bring, if you were selling that at an antiques auction or even in an antique mall, something like that could be in the hundreds, you know, mid, maybe $300 to $500 is
somewhere
a guess.
In there.
Because, again, like I can't see it and I don't know how much that damage will affect it.
Yeah, but there you go. Say maybe $300 to $500 as a,
yeah,
as a potential.
That wouldn't surprise me.
What'd you pay for it, Kathy?
We didn't. In fact, it was in a barn down there. We lived in Kentucky just for a couple of years, and there were several in a barn down there. And so, yes, we only brought one home with us. Yeah.
Did you display it in your home?
Oh, gosh, yes. It's on the wall.
Great. Yep. See? Yeah.
There you go.
It's really beautiful. And, you know, I think the damage is quite minimal, only when it's cracked, and it's cracked. It's not broken apart. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yep. Yeah, yeah. Well, I checked on eBay, and I cannot find anything that looks like this. I've seen, you know, smaller, kind of cheesier ones. I mean, this thing is heavy. It's oak slats. And what I found on there is something like around $500, but nothing is near as, like, this is majestic.
Yeah.
Another place you might look that will maybe show something like you have is Pinterest, because people like to put photographs of their things on there. And not sometimes you can find values and sometimes not. But maybe you could find something simple and, you know, communicate with somebody about it that way.
Yeah, there you go. Good luck, Kathy. Thank you. Well, Peter in Washburn, your turn. Hi, Peter.
Hello. I have a kitchen table, at least 100 years old. It was my great aunt's. It's enamel or porcelain on steel. It's white on the top and black around the rim. And now this has got two leaves that you can pull out and it slides underneath, so it's like 4 foot by a little over 2 foot, and you pull both leaves out, it's 4 foot by 4 foot.
Mm-hmm.
Any idea? And first of all, is it enamel or porcelain, do you know?
Well, I'm not sure without seeing it. I'm thinking it's probably enamel. Because I'm getting the idea of it might be made out of the same things that kitchenware was made of in the early years. When I first saw up here that you had an enamel table, I was thinking of the 50s. But I know what you're talking about now, the earlier period, the 20s. And that was a work table, mm-hmm. probably in someone's kitchen area, you know, that they just used to work with, being, you know, 2 by 4. With the leaves, it's kind of unusual. So I think you have something great. That period isn't as popular right now as, like, the mid-century modern things. But if someone's setting up or has a kitchen from that period, you know, they might pay, I don't know, depending on condition, again, with chips and such, that stuff did chip, and if it's sturdy, somewhere between $100 and $200 maybe.
Yeah. Yeah, there you go. Thank you very much for calling. I want to go, I don't know if you can see online from Jill. Steve emailed to ask us about a cedar chest that his grandfather actually carved, and his grandfather was one heck of a carver. There are three pictures, photos of this. And so now this is something that Steve's grandfather carved and must have taken him a long, long time. There's a rider on a horse, and there's, I mean, it's very intricate in the carving. But how do you value something like that, that, all right, unless his grandfather was a well-known carver, getting a value on something like that would be a little more difficult, wouldn't it?
Yes, Larry, it wouldn't. It goes kind of back to the conversation we had of the gentleman who couldn't find the Mickey Mouse rocking horse. We look at things that are similar. This is fabulous. If you can get onto the webpage, the Facebook page, do look at it. Obviously, the man who did this was a master carver.
Oh, absolutely.
Just outstanding. And I can understand why you would need to insure it, or if it's going to be placed in a museum, you want to know its value. In general, cedar chests aren't valuable, so we don't value it particularly as the piece of furniture, but the carving on this is what makes this.
This is going to be worth a lot.
It could be definitely worth a lot. It's beautiful. Again, find an appraiser who has experience that can look at this, and they would go and look at similar carvings, carved furniture that has any kind of similarities. And because it's one of a kind, because we know the individual, the family member did it here at home, you know, you're not going to find the exact thing. But maybe if this person was this good, maybe he did do more carvings for other people, and there might be a sales record then in that case, or maybe he just gave them as gifts to special people in his life.
Yeah.
But we look at the carvings and kind of value it according to that artwork, and look to find something as similar as we can. And then we see what those kinds of things are selling for today, and kind of, you know, extrapolate and put that information together and come up with a value that way.
It's a beautiful, beautiful Gorgeous. Piece. Steve, you had a very talented grandfather there, for sure. Let's take a call from Steve in Milwaukee. Hi, Steve. Steve, are you there? We lost Steve. Okay, well, let's try Carolyn in Portage. Hi, Carolyn.
Was wondering whether what I have is of any value. It's a Bat Masterson decanter, a liquor decanter. It's straight bourbon whiskey. It's about, oh, I guess, a foot tall, and the seal on it is broken. I've never drank any of it. It was given to me. So I was just wondering if it was any value.
Well, those kind of liquor decanters have gone down in value and aren't really popular. There was a period where a lot of people collected them and put them in their, you know, around their basement bar, that kind of thing. But that's not really popular today. Bat Masterson, there are some people who are interested in him because, you know, he represents popular culture from a period not all that long ago. But those decanters are usually not going for much more than between $20 and $35.
All right. There you go. And on to Cheryl in Berlin. Thank you for calling, Cheryl.
Hi. My brother worked for Coca-Cola, and he gave me a mirror. It's beautiful. It's, I'd say, in 1970, and it's about 25 wide by 18 high, and it's got a old-fashioned girl from about 1890s on it. Mm-hmm. And it says, drink Coca-Cola, trademark are delicious and refreshing. It's got a glass of Coke. It says 5 cents.
Okay. I'm glad you looked at it closely and you saw that it was not an old one. This is a reproduction by the company. It's not a fake because you know where it's from and it's Coca-Cola. And if you look closely in the margin there at the edge of it somewhere, it's probably going to say what year they published these in. Now, the 70s isn't going to be nearly as valuable as the one from the 1890s. But there's always collectors for Coke material. It's just one of those iconic products. If somebody's going for that look, they might pick up a mirror like that from the 70s. I don't know, $50 to $100, somewhere in there.
Somewhere in there.
Yeah. Now, if it were truly from the early period, it would probably, you could probably put another zero on the back.
There you go, Cheryl. And a quick one here. Daniel sent his photo of a Quaker Oats promo with the Canada Dion Quince. And you were talking earlier about advertising and so forth. Those Quince were used in a lot of advertising.
Yeah, they were really probably one of the first kind of that kind used in the popular media. And a lot of people today, especially younger people, have no idea who they are. So collecting that doesn't mean anything to them. It would have to be people who really remember that as an event in their life. The fact that it's Quaker Oats helps this a little bit, but the Quaker Oats isn't the focus of the advertising. It's the five children. It looks to be in
reasonable
condition, not perfect, but reasonable. And it's die cut on the top, which adds a little bit. You know, value-wise, a cardboard piece like that, Quaker Oats helps. I don't know.
No idea there on that one. I have no idea what that one would go for either. Well, I want to go back to your Heirloom Appraisal Services, and you got your new business here in our last minute or so. So you're going to run some classes, and
Sure. And
you're going to let people kind of decide how they want it to run.
Yeah, we'll work it out according to people's needs.
So once again, it could be over a three-day period, or it might be just one Saturday afternoon or something.
Sure.
And to get information on that, if they go to Heirloom Appraisal,
Heirloomappraisal.com or Heirloom Appraisal on Facebook.
Oh, there we go. Shirley Bauman, you'll come back and be with us again?
I'd love to.
She's got a book coming out, too. We'll have to talk about that the next day. She's working on it, about her experiences as an appraiser, and I'm looking forward to hearing more about that one, too. So go to heirloomappraisal.com for more information about her classes or her business. Let's take a look ahead. Tomorrow at 11, we'll talk about groundwater and private wells. And at 11:45, we'll look at what's in store for the 30th Annual Energy Fair. In the meantime, thanks for listening. Stay with us. Lots more in store on the Ideas Network.